Welcome everybody here this evening. Good to see everybody tonight. I'm looking really forward to this week. This week at, maybe about 8:30 or so in the evening on Wednesday, Carolyn and I are going to get in the car from speaking in Tulia, me, not Carolyn, although she'll probably talk to the visitors, go get a small chocolate shake at Sonic and celebrate the fact that April and May and June are over. They've been really good months, but it doesn't seem that way. I guess I've been in Colorado more last 3 months than I've been in Happy. And again, I appreciate everybody who have jumped in and helped fill the gap. I mentioned this morning, seemed like about 20 different people were working to make up for my absence. I do want to make sure that you understand this. It's not because I do the work of 20 men, but it's because I leave a big enough mess behind that 20 people have to kind of take care of it. And so I've appreciated everybody's help, and I've sure appreciated your prayers. We've talked about joy this morning, and I want to talk about joy again this evening, but I've just really have noticed, and my mom has talked about it a number of times, that everything's just seemed to have fallen into place. And I know that even during a difficult time, when things are falling into place, there's a reason for that. And I believe a big part of that reason is because so many of you have been praying for things to go as well as they can during this time. And I believe they have. And so, again, appreciate everybody for your extra work and certainly appreciate your prayers. It has meant a lot to our family, and we have felt the prayers. We talked this morning, used the text Galatians 4:15, where Paul asks the question to the churches in the Galatian region, what's happened to all your joy? And it's a good question, because I think there are times in our lives where we just don't feel very joyful. While there is a difference between joy and happiness is something that I suppose anyone in the world can experience, although I believe that Christians need to experience it more than the world does. But joy is something different. Joy is the result of a blessing of God. Joy is a delight and a gladness that comes as a fruit of the Holy Spirit. And so when Paul asks the question, what's happened to your joy? I think he's really asking us to kind of reflect on our lives, or them to reflect on their lives, and what's going on that would cause your joy in the Lord to be diminished. And so as we go through the scriptures, we find that there's a lot of things that will help restore that joy if we'll just accept it and just do God's things in God's way. In the 127th Psalm, starting in verse 1, This psalm is attributed to Solomon, a song of ascents of Solomon. The King James version at the heading says it's for Solomon. And so whether this is actually a psalm that was penned by Solomon, or it was written on Solomon's behalf, whether by David or someone else, the truth is still here. And it's vital for us to understand that the psalmist begins, "Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain." Now, I think that's one of the keys to understanding when our joy starts to diminish. What's happening? Sometimes we go outside of God's principles, and sometimes we go outside of God's counsel, where we entreat His guidance in prayer. And we try and do things in our own way. And a lot of times we do things first, and then we try and shoehorn them into God's will later on, maybe to make us feel better. I don't know. But this idea, unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain, is an important principle. I think God expects Christians especially to be trying to do great things in their service to Him. As far as we've been blessed and with the talents and the abilities that He gives to us, I think He expects us to use that to His glory. But I think sometimes we kind of just go off on what we want to do, and then we try and see if we can fit it into God's will, at least in our mind, to where we feel comfortable with what we're doing. And so this idea, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain, this becomes an important principle for us. We find out how God wants us to live our life, and then we do it. And there is a blessing for that, and that blessing will result in joy, in gladness, in delight in what we do. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. You ever lay awake at night wondering how you're going to do something? I don't mean planning on something that's important to do, but I mean lay awake just kind of with a worry gnawing at you, wondering if you're going to be able to do this or if the wolf will be at your door or whatever. This is such an important principle for joy, because if we sleep peacefully, if we have a contentment with our lives, then the joy will come. But if we are just always filled with angst, it's awful hard to have joy. And I believe that angst often comes because of a failure to trust in God in the proper way. And truly, I can speak from experience in this, because when I have my worries, it's because I'm not trusting in God in the proper way. Another way we can make sure that we don't lose our joy is by serving only one master. This may be one of the greatest secrets to a successful service to God. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. It's a passage I think that just about everyone can quote, but let me read it. Jesus is talking. This is the Sermon on the Mount, or contained within the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew 6, 24, Jesus says, "No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now this can, I believe, cause a great deal of confusion for us who realize that we need money to live by. But God is not saying that you can't work for money. As a matter of fact, I think that we have plenty of indications within Scripture that he expects us to work. What was it Paul said? If a man will not work, neither should he eat. But I believe what he's talking about is this idea that if we can just get enough money, then we'll be okay. If we can just get enough things stored up, then we'll be secure. Well, God doesn't want our trust to be in our things, our money, our possessions. He wants our trust to be in him. And so he reminds us, Jesus reminds us, you can't serve two masters. Money is an excellent servant, but money is a poor master. And I think very often we forget that, and instead of taking the blessings, the physical blessings that God allows us to accumulate and to earn, sometimes instead of using those in his service, sometimes we kind of get our focus wrong and we begin working for money instead of working for God. Money's a tool, and it's a very good tool as long as it's in service to God. In Luke chapter 16, verse 15, Jesus talks about something that's an important principle for us to really get set within our minds. Jesus in Luke 16, verse 15 says, "For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." This passage, I think, is so important. When you think about it, if people would really use this principle, our advertisements would change, wouldn't they? It always seems like the things that are highly esteemed are the glitzy things, the shiny things, the luxurious things. Nothing wrong with enjoying nice things from time to time. But the idea that we work so hard sometimes for nice things that we think that we really need, and yet sometimes we do it to the exclusion of what God really wants. I think about those who work hard all their life but are continually separated from their family, not for a reasonable amount of time, but just always separated from their family, who are doing it so their family can have the things that they didn't have growing up. But that's no good. I grew up on beans and cornbread about four or five nights a week, and I love beans and cornbread and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you know, just things that were simple food, but they were wholesome food. But I got to be with my parents. I got to enjoy our family. they were blessed to be able to provide that type of a food. That's a type of a food that 95% of the world cannot provide on a regular basis. So it wasn't something that we turned our nose up, not if we were smart anyway at our house, but the idea is sometimes we think that we need better food, better clothes, better houses, better cars. And there's nothing wrong with better as long as in keeping with our income, especially if we've already given that which is devoted to God in keeping with our income first. Then you can, as long as you've taken care of that, then I believe you can enjoy some of these things. But the idea is there are so many things that we highly esteem that we actually start just kind of building our lives around physical things. The things that I believe one of the greatest stealers of our joy is when we build our lives and our goals and our dreams and our aspirations around physical things instead of around spiritual things. Are you in a proper relationship with God? Are those who are in your circle of influence, your spouses, your children, your parents, your friends, are they in a covenant position with God? If these things are being taken care of first and foremost, again, I believe we can enjoy certain things, but we don't highly esteem them. They don't go in the first slot. That nice car isn't up here. It's somewhere down here after the spiritual things. What is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. If we can keep that in mind, I think that'll help us to keep our perspective proper to where we won't have our joy stolen by an improper pursuit for things that really aren't that needed. In Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, the writer says, "Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, 'Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you.'" This idea of being content with what we have is just really important. I've watched people through the years, and I've done the same thing myself, where I'm just really just as happy as can be with whatever I've got, and then I see somebody has a little extra or something a little different, and then all of a sudden my contentment level goes down because somebody has something that I don't have. Instead of appreciating what God has decided I need for this time. Now, I'm not saying that we just sit there like a lump and just take what comes our way and not pursue anything. But this idea that we lose our contentment and therefore our joy because of something that happens within a few moments that we realize we don't have what somebody else does, that's no good. If we can be content with what we have and appreciative for what we have and have that feeling of thanksgiving that we read about earlier this morning, then I believe our joy is going to be greatly increased. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 13, there's something else that I believe steals our joy that if we can apply this principle to, that we can avoid having our joy stolen. And that's this idea of being afraid of the things that physical-minded men are afraid of. And by that I mean we're afraid of something terrible happening to us, terrible disease or poverty or someone just coming in and attacking us and on and on and on. Of course we make proper provisions to make sure that we don't get ourselves in difficult situations, but that's not what this is talking about. This is talking about those who are afraid of, really, those who don't trust in God maybe as much as they should. Who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? Verse 13 says, "But even if you should suffer for what's right, you're blessed. Do not fear what they fear. Do not be frightened." This is one of the greatest, I believe, truths, if we could really grasp this, that will keep us from losing our joy. Don't fear what they fear. Talking about physical-minded men. People are always worried about something happening or some politician taking away something they have or some bad guy coming in and robbing them of what they have. I was visiting with someone not too long ago, and they were reminding me, lock this, lock this, lock this, lock this, lock this, lock this, lock this. And I'm locking is good. I'm all for safety, mind you. But I just asked that person, I said, "Have you ever been robbed?" And their comment was, "No, but there was something in the paper where someone in this neighborhood was recently." Now, I appreciate the fact that they want to take proper precautions. And I'm not laughing at proper precautions. But this idea that something is always about to happen, it isn't making sense. And so we build up a worry and an angst that is not needed. I want to read that again. Do not fear what they fear. Do not be frightened. But in your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. And of course, this is the key. God will take care of you. Christ will give you what you need. And then he points us to the most important. Always be prepared to give everyone an answer to everyone who asks you the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. I realize this is going off in a bit different direction, but I think sometimes our mind needs to go off in a bit different direction. Instead of fearing what everybody else fears, have your mind set on how you can seek and save the lost. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you the reason for the hope that you have. This is what we are here for. Verse 16 tells us, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior may be ashamed of their slander. It is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. And of course, there it is. Sometimes good people will suffer for doing good. But that's okay. If you're going to suffer, make sure it's for the right thing rather than the wrong thing. And then he reminds us, Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. The Holy One suffered so that we wouldn't have to suffer. He paid the price for our evil. And so might there be things in our lives that happen that we don't want to happen? And of course, the answer is yes, they might. But if we can keep our focus upon that which is important, we're not going to spend so much time being afraid of those things that might happen. When you think about it, in short, what we're really talking about is trusting God. Maybe the greatest thing that steals our joy is our inability to trust God, or at least our refusal to trust in God. In Daniel chapter 3 and verse 14, it talks about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And the situation is really serious. They have refused to fall down and worship a golden idol that symbolizes Nebuchadnezzar, or one that Nebuchadnezzar had built. And because of that, they're being called in front of the king and warned, if you don't fall down and worship my idol, we're going to throw you in the fire. And this was really going to happen. The fire was just right there. But watch what happens. In verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar was questioning them, and he said, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you don't serve my gods or worship the image of gold I've set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? You think we have to suffer with anything like that today? Hadn't been too long since an edict was sent out from those in power saying that we would allow men who are feeling like women to go in and use the women's facilities and vice versa. That same edict required high schools to have young boys sharing shower rooms with young girls if they so desired. This was something in writing from the Department of Education, along with the warning of the penalty that would happen if they didn't do it. And if they went on a trip, the young boy thought he was a young girl. He was to stay in the same room with young girls. This was an edict that was sent out, along with the penalties provided for those who refused to follow along with it. We're very fortunate in our state. We had a governor and a legislature that immediately said, well, we ain't going to do it. But here's the thing. You let this happen in your presence. You let this happen, men, to your wives and to your girls. And essentially what you're doing is you're bowing down to the gods of this age. There's a million other ways that we do it. This is just one example. But sometimes we look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego about to be thrown into the fire for not bowing down to idols, and we think, well, I won't bow down to an idol either. But what we do is we put up with things that are sinful behavior so that we don't get penalized. And sometimes we will stand idly by while innocent people suffer. We can't do that. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were servants of God before they were servants of men. And so in verse 16, they replied to the king, O King Nebuchadnezzar, they didn't show any disrespect to him, did they? O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, again, this respect, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up. We need to be able to take righteous stands. We need to do so in the right way. But we need to be willing to face the flames from time to time. And you know what happened? As a result of their faithfulness to God, their trust in God, they were thrown into the flames. They didn't get rescued from that. But what they did get rescued from was from the flames. Did they try to impart a penalty upon them? And they certainly did. But they trusted in God the whole way, and God rescued them. But their attitude was this. God's able to rescue us. We know this. But God expects certain things from us, and we're not going to compromise with that. And so we know he can rescue us, but if he doesn't, we're still not going to compromise what God expects of us. When we can do that, and when we make up our mind in advance to do that, instead of worrying about what might happen to us when we don't comply with evil, we just go through life. And when evil comes along and insists that we take part in evil, we've already made the decision. We're not going to do it. And you may get thrown in the flames. God may save you from those flames. He may not. But the point is this. As we go through life, we are going to find opposition from people in this world because Satan is still the prince of this world. And the prince of this world does not like people serving God nor Christ. But God and Christ expect us to serve, good times and bad, easy things and hard. And if we'll do that, and if we'll make up our minds in advance to do that, then we're going to not have our joy stolen from this continual, what if I have to do this? What if I get in trouble for doing the right thing? What if? And when we have this trust and this confidence in God, it changes the way that you live. And it increases your level of joy. Proverbs 3, verse 5 is where we want to stop. And again, this is what our basis for all of this is when we talk about trying to get back the joy that maybe we have lost. Proverbs 3, verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. You ever do that? Well, I don't see what's wrong with this. I don't see what it would hurt to do this. Trust in God and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. And that's where life gets really, really fun. And you are filled with joy because you're doing God's things in God's way. Without worrying about the penalty for doing so, because you realize, because you trust in God, how great the reward is, and also how powerful the God you serve is. If he decides to rescue us when we take righteous stands, he'll do so. And if he decides that we need to go through it for whatever reason, then that'll happen as well. But do we trust him enough to live our lives for him? Not for money, not for power, not for whatever big project we have. We can do that. Someday we're going to be with him forever. And we're going to have a lot of joy along that journey. I want to offer the invitation this evening. If anyone needs to respond to the gospel's call, won't you do that while we stand and sing?